Thank you. So this is going to be kind of a sort of I guess a very preliminary talk on some work that's like very like in a very early stage, but I think that might be very interesting. And most of this work is based on conversations with Shin Jin, Ben Gamage, and if I have some time, maybe all the stuff I talked about with Sanaf Devala Perkar. And just to like quickly like set up no some notation, I just want to recall that when you have like a 3D n equals 4 theory, these things are determined, the gauge theory are determined by their Higgs branch, which is just like the cotangent bundle to some quotient at mod g, where n is a g representation. And that thing has an action of a group that we call the flavor symmetry, G8. And all of this data is just equivalent to the data of the cotangent bundle to some G representation N, plus some exact sequence of groups containing the gauge group G and the flavor symmetry GH. And so, in addition to the Higgs branch, which is just this cotangent bundle, one can build a second symplectic variety through the BFN construction, which is called the Coulomb branch. And the fastest definition of this thing that I know is you consider the space of maps from the formal bubble into n mod g, take the cohomology. It turns out that convolution on the bubble makes this thing into a ring, and you can take the spectrum. And this is usually some singular variety. And one fact about Coulomb branches that I'm going to need is that there are parameters in your theory known as mass parameters, which are just some map from C star into the maximal torus of the flavor symmetry. And when you have one of these, BFN showed that it gives you a line bundle, like on the Coulomb branch. And then from this line bundle, you can basically make a partial resolution of the Coulomb branch just by taking the direct sum of the non-negative powers of this line bundle. This thing will give you some graded ring, and you can take prod graded by this number k, and you can just take prod of that, and that'll give you some resolution of the Coulomb branch. And so now, like basically, we're on still not like equal footing between these two things. So this Higgs branch is going to be some kind of a smooth stack. And now, like this thing started out as a singular variety, and now we've sort of upgraded it at least to hopefully a smooth space. And there's one other parameter that you can use to make like the put things on a really even footing where you which is called the mass parameter, which is just a character of your group G, but I'm not going to use it so much. Okay, I know that this is like super familiar. I just wanted to set my notation. And like the thing that I'm interested in talking about is two categorical mirror symmetry, which I've also talked about many times here. And what we expect this to be is some sort of equivalence of two categories. Associated to the Higgs branch and this resolved Coulomb branch, or at least the version that I'm going to talk about. And the first category was defined by Kapustin-Rosansky and Solana and is a sort of like an algebraic flavor. I'll unpack more about this when we actually need it. It depends on the parameter M through a particular Lagrangian, which I'll also talk about later. Maybe just to make it match, we'll talk about the notation I seem to be using later in the talk, as it'll be related to the attracting set of the GM action coming from the mass parameter. And on the other side, there's some sort of putative category that you can build from the Coulomb branch, which is supposed to be built by counting solutions to some sort of partial differential equation, which is called like the Fuder equation. But basically, nobody has any idea how to define this thing. And that's basically like what my whole talk will be about, is just how on earth can one get any like constraints on what the definition of this thing could be. And I just want to say, like, one thing that we do expect about this category is that it's going to depend on some extra data attached to the Coulomb branch. And that thing is some sort of holomorphic version of the structure of a Liouville sector. And one place where those things come from is if you have like a holomorphic Lagrangian skeleton inside of your Coulomb branch, then that will give rise to one of these Liouville sectors. But I'm going to show some examples later in the talk where I actually don't know what this Lagrangian, the correct Lagrangian skeleton or holomorphic Lagrangian skeleton is. In fact, I only know like real Lagrangian skeleta. And so I don't want to like bias myself by like assuming that. And the thing that we sort of know about this equivalence, whatever it is, I mean, that's very, this equivalence is very conjectural, because the right-hand side just isn't even defined, is how it decategorifies. In particular, when we take like the topological, apply topological K theory to the Hom categories and these two categories, I'll get some sort of equivalence of one categories. And it's expected that this Fuder thing becomes like the ordinary Rapp-Fekaia category of the Coulomb branch with the same Liouville sector structure. And the Hom spaces in this KRS category are just of the form coherent sheaves on some variety, on various varieties. When you apply K theory to coherent sheaves, you just get the ordinary K theory on the variety. And so this thing becomes something that we call microlocal K sheaves. On my Higgs branch, with this same Lagrangian skeleton. The only thing that like I'd like to say is that like if MH were not a stack, if MH were a scheme, then like the rational topological K theory is actually equal to the cohomology via the Chern character. And this thing would just turn into ordinary sheaves. So basically, like this thing is only different because I'm treating this MH as a stack, like this MH as a stack. And this equivalence here is something that I call Betti symplectic duality. And this is the case where I've turned on a mass, but have not turned on my FI parameter. But to turn on the FI parameter is like very straightforward, and I'm not going to talk about it at all in this talk. And our goal is basically to use like what we know about Betti symplectic duality to learn something about what this Fuder two category could be. And so there's a few strategies that like one could use to describe this wrapped Fuder category. So the first way that you could do this is you could just compute the Rapp-Fekaia category of your Coulomb branch. And then you could just try and directly categorify that thing. So something which like I've talked about many times and is the only example that we really understand right now. People know that the Rapp-Fekaia category of say T star C with the Liouville structure or sector structure determined by like the coordinate cross is equal to the category of Herbert sheaves on the plane with a singularity of the origin. And these are equal to two vector spaces with maps going back and forth such that some maps, one minus LR and one minus RW, are invertible. And this thing has like a direct categorification where I can upgrade V and W to categories and upgrade this to a pair of adjoint functors. And then I can ask for the twists of these functors to be invertible. And that is something that Pranav and Chekman call a perverse showber, or I'm writing it as like two perv. And this thing is just like some direct categorification of the algebra that I have down here. And this gives you some sort of a conjecture that, like, maybe in this case, the wrapped footer category would be something like these perverse showbers. So this is like one way that we could try and learn about like what the footer category is, and this is one that I've written a lot about. So you just compute the Fakaya category and just directly categorify it, and then hope that the footer category is equal to this categorification. The second way is that you can try and like categorify the structural properties of the wrapped Fakaya category. So this is also something that I've like written and talked a little bit about, and I'm just going to go through this very briefly. So there's like various kinds of operations that you can do to this Fakaya category, like change the Liouville structure corresponding to this Lagrangian, say by taking the cross and then removing one of the two components to make your skeleton either be the zero section or the cotangent fiber to zero inside of C. And that gives you some functors between the Fakaya category, and you could imagine that those things lift to functors between wrapped footer categories. Another sort of way that Fakaya categories can be related is if you have like a nice inclusion of like a Liouville sector into another Liouville sector, then that induces like a push forward map between and a pullback map between the Fakaya categories, and you could imagine lifting that thing to the footer category. And so I've also sort of done some work on that. But the thing that I'm most interested in talking about today is basically talking about what you can do with sectorial gluing. So this is when you have your that your symplectic manifold is actually like has a cover by, with its Liouville sector structure, has a cover by other Liouville sectors, then there's a formula that you can compute the wrapped Fakaya category like of the total space as like just some colimit over the Fakaya categories of intersections of these open sets. And like this thing seems like something that it's going to be very plausible to apply to a general Coulomb branch. And then the sort of third way that you could try and learn about these things is you can use some sort of compatibility with geometric Langlands, which gives rise to something which I won't talk about today, which are called like brain boxes. Okay, so all right, so these are like sort of like all of the sort of possible things that one can do. And first, I want to try and talk about like a new non-abelian example of this algebraic categorification. And this is basically just putting like some lipstick on a theorem of Shin-Jin that I would like to explain to you now. Okay, so I want to try and examine the case of a pure gauge theory. So that's the case that your Higgs branch is the cotangent bundle of 0 mod G or BG for some group. And then some reductive group. And then in this case, the Coulomb branch is actually like the universal centralizer scheme of the Langlands dual group. And in a recent paper, Shin Jin computed the wrapped Fakaya category of the universal centralizer scheme. And she showed that it's isomorphic to coherent sheaves on the coarse or the GIT quotient of the torus of the simply connected the maximal torus of the simply connected form of G modulo the Weyl group, and then this thing has a natural action of pi one of G or the center of the simply connected form. And one can look at sheaves that are equivariant for that particular copy of pi one. So I'd like to understand this theorem in the case where I don't have this pi one factor to think about. So that would be if this, if G was simply connected, or equivalently, if this other group was of adjoint type. And in that sort of case, so like one example would be with G as SL2, you can understand this universal centralizer scheme in a very very concrete way. So it's some sort of an integrable system over the affine line. And the fibers of this integrable system, well, there's one special point where the fiber is a copy of the additive group, which is just like a plane. But and then on all the other fibers, it's actually a copy of sorry, of the multiplicative group. So it's some sort of degeneration of the multiplicative group onto the like onto the additive group. And what Shin does is she shows that the Faecaia category is generated by a certain object called the constant section, which is basically a certain section of this integrable system. And the property that it has is it goes through like the origin of this copy of GA. And then it like touches every other fiber exactly one time. And the thing that she proves is that one can actually compute the endomorphisms of this object K inside of the Rapp-Faecaia category. And what she finds, so in this case, my torus is simply connected, she finds that it gives you functions on the torus that are invariant for the action of the Weyl group. And so that like basically then gives you this theorem that the rest of the Faecaia category is going to be modules over that ring, which is just going to be coherent sheaves on this coarse quotient. And I would now like to connect this to the Betti symplectic duality conjecture. So one other place where this same exact ring comes up is if you compute the algebraic K theory of BG. So that's just the same thing as taking the K theory of BT and then taking W invariants. And that's functions on the K theory of the representation category of the torus is just functions on the torus up to the W invariants. Okay, so then what that tells you then is that there's like
Well,
an
Justin.
yes.
I have a quick question. Could you explain what how you define this G of Langlands dual?
Sorry, what?
Just the JPGL2 or like your general GGL, how you define it?
Yeah, so this thing is you look at elements of your Lie algebra. So this thing is pairs of elements of your Lie algebra and an element of your group, such that when you act by the adjoint action on the element X, you just get X back. So that thing centralizes. Maybe you consider this thing like all up to conjugation. And then you make the assumption that this X can't just be any element of the Lie algebra. Sorry, so this is in the Lie algebra times G. And then you don't allow, sorry, my math factor is terrible. And then you don't allow just any element. You need that X is actually a regular element. So it's just some open, and that's just an open condition. And so what I'm saying is that generically, if you have an element of the Lie algebra of SL2, that's regular. Actually, the definition of regular is that its centralizer is kind of like a maximal dimension. You'll get a copy of GM, like and but when you're a very particular element, when your x is equal to this guy, Then the centralizer is actually a copy of the additive group. Does that help?
Yes, thank you.
Sorry, and I guess this is J of G in the way that I've defined it. And so now the point is that you can interpret, now this lets you interpret this theorem of Jin as an instance of like the Betti symplectic duality, where there's an equivalence between the Rapp-Fakaya category and the K-sheaves that basically sends this constant slice to the constant K-sheaf on BG. And basically just the property that this thing has, which is the only thing that I know about K-sheaves, is that the endomorphisms of this thing is the K-theory of BG. And so basically, then Shin's computation tells you that the functor that sends this to this is well-defined, or like extends to a map. And then the other part of her theorem is that like this K is actually the generator. So this is everything. And just to match what I wrote on the other page, like really, like I think of K sheaves on the base as some sort of micro-local thing on the cotangent bundle, but this is just purely notation. Okay, so then this gives you like a very like boring conjecture for what the footer category is. This thing tells you that like in some sense the footer category of JG check, or I'm sorry, J PGL2 is just the same thing as categories with an action of rep SL2. So that gives you just like, but that's a very boring sort of conjecture. This is basically, but it is kind of similar to the way that Kapranov and Shekman made their conjecture, where they just compute, just compute the Fakaya category of T star C, and then just find some direct categorification of it, and just say that a Schober is some sort of element of that categorific, of that categorification. And this would be sort of like a similarly boring way of defining the footer category of JPGL2. But this basically would just make 3D mirror symmetry true by definition. But at least like it like it's consistent. And then like now the game becomes find some sort of other definition of JPGL2 that it's like if the footer category of JPGL2 that'll give you rep SL2 mod out. Okay, so any questions about this example? Okay, so let me. Oh, sorry.
Maybe I can also ask like a naive question. Are you secretly talking about stacks like down there?
Secretly. I think I'm very blatantly talking about stacks down there. What do you mean?
Just because you said K sheaves, right? I'm not very familiar with that thing, but I guess you are talking about stacks.
G is a stack. But J wasn't a stack, right? And there was this stability condition with X experiment, right? Which might lead into a scheme, right? So
There's no stability condition.
JGL is like a normal, affine variety, just smooth affine variety.
Yeah, and then BG the stack. BG is just point mod G. Okay, so that's like a very, but anyway, but this tells you that basically Shen proved, she proved already Betti mirror symmetry for JPGL2. And then if you interpret her thing properly, she also sort of gives you, some sort of conjecture for what the footer category of J could be. But let me do one more complicated example just that to incorporate this pi one. Just because I think that actually like that's pretty interesting and tells you something kind of interesting about this conjecture. All right. So the next example is if G is PGL2. So then now you're looking at J of SL2. And the thing that happens is you basically have the same picture, except for now your central fiber basically bifurcates into two copies of GA that are labeled by the center of SL2. So now you've got two copies of GA and then generically one copy of GM. And then the thing that you can find is that now there will be two constant sections, one corresponding to each point at the center. They basically each run through this central point and then touch everything one time. And then now you can compute sort of the endomorphisms of these things. And what Shin's theorem tells us is that it's basically this 2x2 matrix algebra where on the diagonal components, basically like now you can look at functions on the torus for SL2. So like the simply connected form of PGL2 and look at mod W. And then that thing will have an action of pi one of G on it. Or it's like pi one of PGL2 or the center of SL2 acts on this thing. And then you can just decompose it into isotypic components. So this thing would basically like have two so if you look at OTC, this thing has an action of the simply connected form, which is this pi one of PGL2. And also it has this commuting action of W. And basically all I'm saying is that you can just decompose, you have, you know, your sine representation and the center is just a copy of Z mod 2Z. So it has two representations being the sine and the trivial. And so you can just break things into isotypic components and then you'll get this like, and like the self endomorphisms of K1 and K-1 are both the trivial isotypic component. And then Hom's from one to the other will be the sine isotypic component. Does that make sense?
Justin, can I just confirm, one way to think about this is you could take O of the simply connected torus,
yes,
of SU, push it forward to the torus of PGL2.
Yes.
And you bring two vector bundle.
Yes, and it's endomorphisms of that.
So that's one way to think about that.
Yeah, and in fact, that's exactly what I wrote down on this next computation. So you can interpret this thing now in terms of K-theory in exactly that same way, where you can look at K-theory of the endomorphisms of rep SL2 as a module for rep PGL2. Or I guess I was all writing this as like coherent sheaves on BPGL2 before. So that thing will be some sort of a rank two, like that category, you know, rep SL2 sort of breaks into two components, basically the stuff with even highest weight and the stuff with odd highest weight. So this thing basically breaks into two pieces where you have rep SL2 with like the even highest weight plus rep SL2 of the odd highest weight. But this thing is rep PGL2. And okay, so then like the fancy way of saying this is that this BSL2 over BPGL2 is a Z mod 2Z gerb. And basically you can define like, you know, twisted K theory of PGL2 twisted by this gerb, which I'm calling minus one to match, oh, I'm sorry, two sections, one and minus one. And basically, the K theory of BGL2 twisted by this gerb, is just this thing that I was calling rep SL2 odd. Okay, and so then now, like basically, like the same thing upgrades. Like what this existence of twisted K theory tells you is that you know, in this category of K sheaves, I have the ordinary constant sheaf of BPGL2. Sorry, I just stopped writing B for some reason. Or you can take the constant sheaf and you can twist it by this gerb. So that gives you like these two different objects. And those things are basically dual to the two different constant sections.
And just to confirm what those constant sections are, for SL2, this is going to be like 0 in the top left-hand corner, -1 and 1, or 1 and -1 along the anti-diagonal, and then you have a free parameter at the bottom right corner?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I could write them down in those terms for you in a minute, but I just didn't do it right now. And actually, an interesting question where, like, I know how to get like one of those constant sections like out of like the Coulomb branch construction as the GKLO, but I don't quite understand how to incorporate the center into the BFN construction, but maybe you do.
It's probably going to be something very dumb about that. Right? I mean, when you change the center, you're changing like which monocle operators you allow. Yeah, I would need to think about it for a little longer.
Yeah. Okay.
And the JGL, that's the Coulomb branch of the pure gauge theory from G, right?
Sorry?
The JGL, JG Langlands dual. Actually, yeah,
if you take the Coulomb branch of the pure gauge theory for G, right? Yes. Okay. All right. So that, like, so then she also settled this case of Betty's symplectic duality as well. But in fact, I should say that I didn't understand the importance of these gerbs. I had maybe made the conjecture, but did not understand the importance of these gerbs until I saw this example. It's a good thing that she was doing it before I was. Like that she was doing it independently, or she might have gotten confused. Okay, so then the last computation that like I want to talk about of hers, which is very interesting, is how she defines like this Louisville structure, like on the universal centralizer scheme. And the way that she does this is she uses like a certain embedding of T star of the Langlands dual torus into J. And basically like the picture that you should have is that this torus actually it is actually equal to, in this PGL2 case, this thing is actually equal to the complement of the constant section. And this thing sits inside of J. And basically, like, the picture that you should have, right, is that this constant section is going through the center of this copy of GA. And when you remove it, like this thing becomes a copy of GM. But it's actually like a very like ugly, inclusion. It's not so easy to see what it does on these interval systems. But basically what it does do is it takes the cotangent fiber of T star TL. And then when you push it in, it basically becomes some sort of a double cover. or sorry, some sort of a twofold cover of the integrable system, some sort of a multi-section. And in fact, it actually just ends up being equal to two copies of the Kostin section. But that's like kind of like non-obvious. And anyway, and then so if you work out what this thing does, then this induction ends up being the inclusion of coherent sheet, this just the natural push forward from coherent sheets on T to T mod W. And this thing, right, functions on T breaks up as a, I drew this for SL2. So this thing should, in general, this thing should have been a W sheeted cover. And then this thing should have been like a W copies of J, of K, sorry. And like you can sort of check that the push forward of the rank one vector, the trivial vector bundle on T becomes a rank W vector bundle on T mod W. And then you can now like reinterpret this thing in terms of the K sheaves. Where this is obviously K sheaves of BT. This thing is obviously K sheaves of BG, as we've seen. And then now you can try and match what functor you get, and you find out that this thing is the parabolic induction. But in fact, like if you knew your physics, you would have known this before, because there's like a at least in the other direction where you put the parabolic induction interface on the A side, then you know that you get this inclusion on the B side. And that's like basically an observation due to Telemann. And like you can just see that this is just like swapping A and B in his conjecture. Okay, so that's kind of cool. And so now like one can start to ask, like what are the prospects of doing something like this for like other Coulomb branches? And this sort of leads to like an old conjecture of mine, which I'll try to explain to you now about how one finds open subsets on the Coulomb branches.
Can I ask you, is there a category similar to K sheaves of BB on the other side?
No, it's so basically like you should think of this thing. So if you have a symplectic, so the way that I think about this is that like a symplectomorphism or a symplectic embedding is a stupid Lagrangian correspondence. There is like a Lagrangian correspondence that looks like this. But basically this is just a very dumb kind of Lagrangian correspondence. And then that thing is mirror basically to this Lagrangian correspondence. Notice it's not like the individual pieces are mirror to one another, or well.
But if I have an interface, I expect I can find line operators on both sides as well as on the interface.
Sure.
So like this PD seems to be that on this lines on the interface of this theory.
K sheaves on BT and K sheaves on BB are the same. BT and BB are homotopic as stacks. The interesting thing is that push forward from BB is different from push forward from BT. That's really the point. Somehow, like that inclusion of T star of TL, JG, is mirror not. Do you agree with that, Justin?
Yeah, I agree with that. But basically, like, yeah, I mean, like, so what you could say Yeah, maybe I'll just say this before I say what I was going to say. Before what I was actually going to say is that, yeah, so you expect that, so this thing leads to a conjecture right away, which is an instance of what I was going to talk about, which is that you can rewrite this correspondence as just a Lagrangian BB sitting inside of BT times BG, the conormal to this thing, sitting inside the cotangent bundle of this thing. Because if this thing was not a Lagrangian correspondence, right? I needed to cotangent bundle everything and then take the conormal to that embedding. Now it's fixed. And like now you want to say like, can I recover? This thing. Through the BFN construction. And a conjecture that like I made many years ago, and I think I'm finally starting to understand how to do, is that, you know, you can look at the category of lines, which is basically D modules on the stack BTK times BGK. And this thing will give you a copy of BK sitting inside. And then you can look at the trivial line, which is basically BTO times BGO sitting inside of here. And you can try and compute the fiber product of these things. And so if you know how this works, so this thing will be TK times GK. And then now you mod out on both sides by the TO times GO action, and then the BK action. In the most naive sense. And then now you can simplify this thing by noticing that BK mod TK is actually B of NK, or like basically you can mod out, if you mod this BK, you can use it to kill the TK factor, but you're left with a unipotent factor in the end. And what you find is that this thing ends up becoming either semi-infinite orbits inside of the flag manifold or G of O orbits from the semi-infinite flag variety. So this thing is like FL infinity over 2. And then the homology of guy this thing has actions of the homology of TO mod TK mod TO, and it has the actions of the homology of GO mod GK mod GO. So this thing is the Coulomb branch. So this thing is functions on T star TL. I think I'm writing it this way. This thing is functions on JGL. And so this thing now is like some sort of a bimodule. It's easy to see that at least as a vector space, this thing is equal to the to this. And what I would like to claim is it's actually true, like this action is actually what induces this isomorphism. So I don't know that that's, I mean, just abstractly, I know that these things are isomorphic as vector spaces, but I can't compute this action well enough to know that the action map is what's giving me this thing. But let's say that I could show that. Then like what you found is your bimodule. So you have this isomorphism. And then now, because of the action here, like by acting on the unit in this algebra, right? So this thing is isomorphic to O of T dual mod TL. So you have an element here, which is one. That gives you a map from the functions on, let me just write it this way. This thing gives you an isomorphism between this and this, and a canonical element one. And then by acting on that element, you get a map from functions on JGL. And the conjecture is that if this map, say, is called I, that this is the map I star. Does that make sense, Wenjin? So this is like basically like how you would compute the boundary local operators with their action of of the bulk local operators. And basically you should claim that you can get this map out. And even more so, the thing that I have claimed a bunch of times in the past, is there's a particular monopole operator here, which is M to the sum of all of the fundamentals. And that basically like that this thing is localization. I claim that this thing like inverts this element. So let me just say a word about like, you know, why you know that these two spaces are actually isomorphic, but I don't have enough control to be 100% sure of what the action is. Basically, the reason is that this homology is just totally insensitive to this action of U of K. So you can just completely forget it. And then you're just looking at T of O equivariant cohomology of the Grassmannian, and you can basically just stratify that by like Iwahori orbits. And they'll be there, those things are in, you know, bijection with the weight lattice, and so is this. That was something that I learned from Sam Raskin.
And I don't need to worry about bijection.
Sorry?
And I don't need to worry about the bijection.
I can't quite hear you.
He's asking whether you need to worry about the bound or action. But I mean, the point is exactly that if instead of modding out by T of O, you modded out by G of O, then you would be taking the bound group invariance.
Yeah, but I'm not doing any bound group invariance. I'm actually just looking at the Iwahori instead.
Okay, Justin, just using localization on the affine
Grassmannian. You're saying that T of O invariance.
Yeah, maybe that's a different way of saying it. But I don't want to use the localization theorem is the point. Like I want to know this before using the local. I don't want to invert anything. I don't want to invert anything in my integrable system.
Yeah. really are like if you that is the inclusion of the fixed points.
Yeah. But you can ask, is this thing a, well, I don't actually know that that action is the inclusion of the fixed points, but yeah, I mean, I think it is, but what I mean is that, I don't want to use the, I want to claim that this thing is an isomorphism without inverting anything. Mm-hmm. Not an isomorphism of like, modules or something, but of rings, just an isomorphism of underlying modules or underlying vector spaces.
Yeah, I mean, there's some degree issues.
Yeah. So that's like basically like, so I don't expect that this thing preserve. That's what this U of K is going to screw up. Like forgetting that U of K messes only with degree. But anyway, like understanding this very well, I think is like, I think the most interesting thing I can think of. Okay, so that was a slight digression. I was going to do that at the end. But now I want to, I don't have a ton of time. I just want to talk really briefly about like what I think this is saying. So this attracting set parameter ends up giving rise to something called like the attracting set Lagrangian. And this is basically defined in the following way. So first I need like a slight digression or some notation. So suppose that like X and Y are both spaces over GM, over BGM. And suppose that like F is an endomorphism of BGM. Yeah. Then you can look at maps from Y into BGM. And then, I want to say actually the X maps to Y. Then by precomposing this map, I can get something from X to BGM by pulling back along F. Oh, sorry, I've used F twice, so let me call that thing K. And then there's a particularly special map that I have in here, which is X is a space over BGM, so it just naturally has a structure map. And then I can compose with K. And then I can look at the space of maps from X to Y that live over, I can look at this, pull back the space and call it the space of maps from X to Y that live over K. Okay, and then now there are two, so I have some special BGM spaces. The Higgs branch modulo its flavor action. Determined by my mass parameter. A1 mod GM lives over GM. And then over there. And then I want to do A1 mod GM and then 0 mod GM and then GM mod GM. And I want to consider these guys, I guess, as my x's, and this one is my y. And then by basically taking the direct sum, then you basically get this attracting correspondence. So sorry, I'm going to apply this maps into MH GMK. I'm going to apply that to this map out of this span here. And then that's going to give me something going in the other direction. And then if I map out of just the GM mod GM, that just gives me MH. So I'm not going to take the direct sum of those. I'm just going to identify, or I'm just going to use the map from the disjoint union of a bunch of copies of MH to MH. And then this thing is what I would call the fixed point set. And this thing is what I would call the attracting set. Or attracting stack. Let me just show you like an example of what this thing looks like. Let's say that I look at like the trivial action of C star on BG. So that's then then MH is just T star BG. And then it turns out that this thing can be identified with the space of rational characters. Or just the space of characters from G. And then you take like the attracting set for that character, and then you can do the same thing with the fixed point sets. And you get a correspondence that looks like that. It's your attracting set. Sorry, let me just for ease, let me just do it on the base, just so I don't have to. And so this thing actually ends up being the disjoint union over all the parabolics. And this thing ends up, but maybe the parabolics are counted with a bunch of times, and this one ends up actually being the disjoint union over all of the levies. So the point is that this recovers the correspondence that I was just recovering. Or as a component, this has the correspondence I was just looking at, which was this BT, BB, BB, that was dual to that I claimed was dual to this inclusion. BT, BB, BG, this is the inclusion. Okay. So sorry, do people, I think I'm running like pretty low on time. So let me decide like what should I do?
I mean, you're basically answering.
Yeah, okay. So then let me just say like, then like my conjecture is that the components of MHGM. Are dual to open subsets. So I have my result. So this GM would determine the mass parameter. So I have my resolved Coulomb branch. And then I can choose an open subset in there. And then map that thing to MC. D gamma. And this thing is actually defined in the following way. So remember that this thing was the proj over the direct sum over all k. K of this line bundle LKM. What I claim is that a gamma, so this attracting component actually had a bunch of components labeled by K. And I claim that like a gamma of weight K determines a certain section in here. And this thing is actually just the non-vanishing set of that section. So the components of this thing are labeled by gamma. And these are like the form of the subsets. All right. And then I have a lot more to say about this, but I think I'll stop.